Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, May 9th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw television show. Monday's WWE Raw was taped earlier on Monday in London, England at the O2 Arena, and I was expecting a really hot crowd, as we've seen from, a lot of the UK crowds have been pretty red hot with all sorts of singing and all sorts of other stuff. And we got a little bit of it, but for the most part, this was a pretty tame crowd. WWE kind of gave them a lot of wrestling on this show, didn't give them a lot of talking. I don't know if they thought, hey, that's the way to counter some of this. Not necessarily counter, but just give them what they want, satisfy them. Didn't really seem to do the trick, but it was just kind of an odd show with just so much wrestling on the show. Now, if you are someone who in your life wants wrestling, and nothing but wrestling, so help you God, well, you know, this is probably what you were looking for. I don't know if you still came away completely satisfied, because it wasn't, it just, a lot of the matches were solid, nothing really wrong with them, but nothing really memorable about this particular show either. I'm someone that, I love a good wrestling match, but I love all the things that come along with it that make up pro wrestling. The good promos and the storylines. And now I certainly don't mind a night like this where it's wrestling heavy. I'm not going to grumble about it. But I just thought it would have been a better show than it ended up being. But we'll work our way through it as usual, as far as starting at the top of my live review, which I do every Monday night. So if you are interested in follow along, just go to the main page at ProWrestling.net, and you can use my report as an outline, just as I am doing. They open things up with Dean Ambrose walking backstage. He just so happened to get a phone call, and it was Kurt Angle. Well, he only identified him as Kurt, and I was actually wondering if he was up to something here. We'll get to that in a second, but Ambrose asked if Kurt got the pictures he sent, and he said, oh, your wife opened them? I don't know if do they really want to be bringing up pictures, given some of the things that have happened with leaks of several women on the roster, and actually a couple of guys for that matter, too? Anyhow, Ambrose said he thought Kurt would never ask. He said he had a great idea for the name of their next pay-per-view, which is great balls of fire, because we already know that Extreme Rules is coming up. The call dropped, and Ambrose told a production crew member to hit his music because he had an important announcement to make. Man, what a coincidence. They just happened to catch Dean Ambrose at this exact time. They easily could have been showing anyone else on the roster, and nothing would have happened. But once in the ring, Ambrose said he just got off the phone with Kurt Angle. So he did mention him by name here. He said Kurt wouldn't be there. There were some boos, and he said he thinks Angle's dog was sick or something, and you can't boo a sick dog. Sounded like the same number of people booed. Not that there were a ton of boos, but there were some boos. Ambrose said that Angle named him active general manager of Raw. Like, what? I knew this going in. We had a couple of great correspondents that helped provide a really good report going in. We should have live coverage of SmackDown on Tuesday as well, with the tapings being in London. A big shout out to them. A big thank you. I knew going in what the approach was, and I was hoping there's some good explanation for it. No, Angle couldn't be there, and so he called Dean Ambrose when he was only saying Kurt. I thought we'd find out like it was a ruse, like Ambrose was, I was hoping anyway, that it was like a ruse, and Ambrose was saying it was a guy named Kurt, was actually his buddy Kurt from down the road or something like that, and well, he never said Angle, that sort of a thing, because it's just so ridiculous that, yeah, the general manager can't be there, and so he's going to appoint one of the active wrestlers to be the general manager. I know it's pro wrestling, it's silly, some people out there find that perfectly acceptable. My personal taste, it just make it somewhat realistic. And I made the comparison in my live review, like if Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, couldn't handle the game for whatever reason, not that he's got to be there, but work with me here. It'd be like him going, oh, I need a night off. I'm going to have Sidney Crosby, the Penguin star. I'll make him the active commissioner of the league while I'm away. Well, it got worse because Miz and Maurice interrupted. They headed to the ring, and Miz mocked fans for approving Ambrose of being GM, saying that Raw will be absolute chaos. Ambrose said he had a very detailed plan for an action-packed show. Miz said, hold the phone. He got a phone call from Stephanie McMahon. She'd heard about Angle's plan and knew it could be the final edition of Raw if Ambrose was allowed to run it. And Miz announced that Stephanie named him co-acting general manager for the night. And then Ambrose was surprisingly kind of okay with this. He offered Miz a handshake, promised no funny business, held the other arm behind his back. And then Braun Strowman interrupted. Now, imagine if an NHL commissioner, Gary Bettman, had a boss of his own. And he couldn't make the game either, even though he'd been doing all sorts of talk show appearances all over London. Anyway, he would call up Alex Ovechkin, the star player from the other team, and say, "You are the active general manager. You're going to be a co-general manager along with Sidney Crosby. What could possibly go wrong with this?" I mean, it's silly. I know, again, some of you, it's like, well, it's just pro wrestling. I kind of like that silly stuff. And I can understand, like, the idea of crazy Dean Ambrose running Raw, why that would appeal to some. And there's, I mean, believe me, there's a small part of me going, well, yeah, if, like, there was a better storyline and they had some good ideas for it and it was going to be Dean Ambrose, you know, some of that craziness rubbing off. But instead, it was just a very straightforward show. I mean, at one point in all of this, he did talk about less talk, more action. And they followed through, but it wasn't like the theme of his promo or anything like that. So, I mean, it's not what I like. I don't need a member of the active roster being named general manager for the night without some better explanation than, well, Kurt Angle just called him up for the hell of it. But anyway, Braun Strowman interrupted. He had his arm in a sling, and he talked about how he took out Roman Reigns at Payback. That got some cheers and yes chance. And he said as long as Reigns can walk, he's not finished with him. And he told Ambrose and Miz to tell Angle and Stephanie that he is going to end Reigns. And it's like, well, I think he just did. Strowman said that once he's finished with Roman, he wants Brock Lesnar. This led to Kalisto coming out to the sounds of crickets. The crowd had been, you know, pretty hot for the entrances at this point in the show. Of course, it's the beginning of the show. And then Kalisto came out. Not so much. He recalled beating Strowman in the dumpster match. He said Strowman couldn't take it and put him in the dumpster and could have ended his career. No one treats Kalisto like trash. He demanded a match against Braun, who just laughed and said Kalisto beat him on a technicality. And then Strowman said he would beat him with one arm tied behind his back. Actually, at this point, he was saying when his arm was healed. But he said he could do it with one arm if he needed to. Well, it was all Ambrose needed to hear. He booked Strowman against Kalisto. And Strowman's like, hey, I said I'm injured. And Ambrose said, yeah, I heard that. But I also heard you say you could do it, beat him with one arm. And Strowman dropped the mic, and Miz congratulated Ambrose, I'm thinking he's going to say, for already putting an injured talent in harm's way. But he said, for ending the career of Kalisto just minutes into his run as general manager. And then Ambrose ended up booking Miz against Finn Balor as the first match of the night. Coming out of a break, they went to that match, and it was Finn Balor defeating The Miz in 13:20. They did a restart here because Miz ended up getting a pin, well, actually a DQ win. What happened was Maurice was on the apron. Miz shoved Balor into the referee, which bumped Maurice, and then Miz ended up announcing that as general manager, he was disqualifying Balor because he put his hands on a referee. And that's when Dean Ambrose came out and said, again, not so fast. He restarted the match. And that's when Balor ended up hitting a swing blade clothesline, his running drop kick, and then the coup de grace from the top rope for the win. So Finn Balor goes over here. The number one contender, The Miz, he loses. But he got a little bit of heat back later on in the show. It's Miz. That match had already been set in stone anyway. So a little bit odd that he'd lose, but I don't know. Does this mean he's going to win the championship? You know, they like to have people lose going into those title matches. I have no idea. But Balor does go over. No real follow-up to Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor, which was kind of disappointing. And I just wonder if the news that Braun Strowman is going to be out of action for 4 to 8 weeks is going to change things. That's he has a legitimate elbow issue. The Pro Wrestling Sheet was the first report that I saw anyway, that he's going to miss 4 to 8 weeks with this injury. And WWE, as of this, as I record this, has yet to confirm this. But, I mean, they sure looked like they were, the angle that they did later on in this show made it seem like he was being written out, or, you know, could be. I mean, hell, they said he had a torn rotator cuff just 2 weeks ago when he was back on the show. So they can do whatever they want. But I could certainly see where this would be used as an injury angle if that's the direction they want to go in. And so if, you know, I don't know when this decision was made, when they figured out, like, he needs surgery. But it's interesting that last week a lot of it was about Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt. Now you may be left, I don't know what their plan was for Extreme Rules. If it was going to be Strowman facing Reigns or Strowman challenging Brock Lesnar, even at that. Now that wasn't going to take place at Extreme Rules, but it was for the Great Balls of Fire show. It's what we all assumed, but maybe they're saving it for SummerSlam. But if they were going to go with any of those scenarios, then do they feel the need to kind of rush say, Finn Balor into that position and kind of pull him off of, pull him out of the Bray Wyatt program for now. But anyway, the broadcast team hyped Kalisto and Strowman for later in the show, and we went backstage where Alexa Bliss was in front of her locker. Nia Jax entered the room and brought up how Alexa kind of ran down everybody but her last week, and she asked Bliss if she meant it when she said she was great, and Bliss, of course, is kind of just trying to save her ass here and saying, of course I did. And Jax said she wanted the next title shot. Bliss said Kurt Angle makes the matches, and he wasn't there, but I'll talk to him once he gets back. So she's just trying to buy herself some time. And Nia says, until you do, it looks like you just got yourself a new best friend. And they went to a break. Then we had an ad for SmackDown. Dolph Ziggler confronting Shinsuke Nakamura. Not to be confused with Shinsuke Nakamura confronting Dolph Ziggler, which I'm sure we'll get at some point if we haven't already. I don't know. They're really dragging this out. I mean, am I looking forward to his first main roster match? Yeah, but this whole plan of, well, we're going to have him do a bunch of entrances, I don't know. We'll talk more about that in the SmackDown audio review. I'm sure it's building anticipation with some. Right now, I'm just kind of like, let's just get to it. I don't feel like my anticipation's building as much as my frustration is building. Second match, though, was Alexa Bliss defeating Mickie James in 8:15. It was a non-title match. Bliss had Nia in her corner, so Mickie James brought out Bayley. And Bayley and Bliss ended up brawling to the back after the match, and that allowed Jax to basically destroy Mickie James. Like, if you found out tomorrow, yeah, Mickie James decided she doesn't want to work for the company anymore, this, you'd think back to this and go, oh, that explains it. I don't think that's what's happening, don't get me wrong. But no, I think that they just wanted to make Nia Jax look strong. She also kind of factored into the finish, because late in the match, she had James, she had Bliss down and she goes to the ropes, and that's when Nia Jax stopped her, and then James ended up kicking herself free, and then Bayley dove onto Jax, but by this point, Alexa had recovered and cut off Mickey and ended up punching her down and then covered her to get the win. So Alexa goes over, and then you had that big post-match angle, so they put a little bit of heat on both Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax, and I can't blame them for focusing on the three they did. They're the three that are, you know, featured prominently in the storylines right now. I do wish that things were better for Mickie James. You know, she came in and said that goofy introduction with La Luchadora, and I was okay with her being a heel. I was somebody going, hey, she played a really good heel in TNA. She can do it here. But it didn't really click, and now that she's a babyface, that isn't really, they just haven't really gotten behind her for some reason, and I wish they would do more with her. She should just, as you know, given her legacy with this company, it feels like she should mean so much more than she does. It's a shame. Backstage, Dean Ambrose was going over his plans with a production crew member on a clipboard, and then Miz confronted him about restarting his match, and Ambrose ended up telling him he had the whole show laid out, and Miz might as well just go ahead and go home. Miz was upset. He had a special Miz TV scheduled with a One Direction member, he said. Ambrose said it was canceled, and he wanted more action and less talk. And then Miz ended up booking Ambrose against Bray Wyatt and took the clipboard while he was at it. That was the line there. But again, it just kind of occurred in this conversation with Miz. It wasn't like something they set out from the top to do. And I think had you kind of alerted that crowd, yeah, less talk, more action, that might have got them fired up and kind of into the theme of it. But just kind of throwing it out there casually, you know, nearly an hour into the show, it didn't really feel like a theme as much as something he said in passing. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention is they did show a tail of the tape. They wanted to show the size difference between Kalisto and Braun Strowman. We went at the top of the second hour backstage where Charlie Caruso attempted to interview Samoa Joe, who cut her off, and Joe said Seth Rollins lives life on Joe's terms now, and he said it's over when he says it's over, and he's not done with Rollins, and Seth attacked Joe, and they brawled, and several referees and agents intervened. They showed some highlights from the dumpster match, and then in the third match, it was Braun Strowman fighting Kalisto to an apparent no contest in about 30 seconds because, first, Strowman wasn't going to take the match. The referee called for the bell anyway. Kalisto charged, and Strowman ended up, I think, kicking him in the head. And then he ended up with Strowman before the match even started, he said that Roman Reigns is a coward who won't face him like a man. Well, after Strowman had knocked down Kalisto, it didn't take long before Roman Reigns came out. And he was heavily booed. He still had his left shoulder taped. Keep in mind, Strowman's arm is still in the sling for this. and he entered the ring. Kalisto's gone. He scrambles out at this point. And Roman ends up kicking the injured arm of Strowman, hit him with three Superman punches. Strowman goes down after the on the third one, and then rolls to ringside. Reigns ends up following and ran into a boot from Strowman, so it looks like it was going to be competitive at this point. And then it was pretty much, well, it was mostly Reigns from that point forward. He dodged a charging Strowman, ran into the post, and then Roman pulled the arm out of the sling and pulled it into the ring post several times. And then he grabbed a chair, slammed it over the bad arm of Braun several times, and then held. Strowman was holding his bad arm as he headed to the back while Roman stood in the ring as his music played, and the crowd was kind of booing here, and to put it nicely. And Michael Cole says, he doesn't look like a pathetic coward now. And I'm like, well, he just beat up a man whose arm was in a sling. So he kind of does. I know what they were going for. I didn't come off too terribly bad or anything like that. But, you know, the idea was that basically, I mean, how many times have we seen Braun Strowman do something like this to Roman Reigns? So it's kind of turnabout is fair play. But at the same time, he was also saving Kalisto from the big bully and all of that. So you had a couple of excuses for Roman Reigns. I just don't know that I would have used it. I would have gone right back to the pathetic coward line. This would have been a spot for Corey Graves to jump in and question, you know, what is Braun, you know, basically point out that, yeah, he is a coward. How could he do this? And then Michael Cole and Booker T defend the actions of Roman Reigns to kind of help explain it to anyone who might be sitting out there going, he just beat up a one-armed man. But anyway, I think they'll be fine with this. And then the broadcast team announced Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins for later in the show, which surprised me when I was getting the spoilers in. You know, I didn't, no way to avoid it when you know, I'm getting the report sent to me. But I can't tell you that when it aired, it surprised me when they said this. But when I got the spoiler update, yeah, this did surprise me that they were going to go with this. And even then, I'm like, it'll probably be brief. It'll probably be one of those more of an angle than an actual match. And it wasn't, but more on that in a little bit. Goldust approached R-Truth and said this was the night. Truth was being playful, listening to music, and Goldust was serious. And he said it hurt when Angle said their one-loss record wasn't good enough for a tag title shot because they both knew it was true. And he said they know what they can do, and now it's time to show everyone. And he asked Truth if he's with them, and Truth said he's always been with them. And Truth actually said, let's go shock the world. This was a nice touch. And then in the fourth match, it was the tag team turmoil match. Yeah, the team starting it, Sheamus and Cesaro, the eventual winners, started with Enzo and Big Cass. Took them a while to get them out, 6 minutes and 40 seconds before Enzo tapped out to Cesaro sharpshooter. And then at 10:30, it was Sheamus who bro-kicked Heath Slater. They beat the hell. Basically, they brawled with Rhino and Slater at ringside and got the better of it. And that, you know, the tide never really turned there. And so Slater's eliminated along with Rhino. Next team out is Gallows and Anderson, and they go to a commercial break. And I'm watching this thinking, God, you know, it's cool that Sheamus and Cesaro are these, are, you know, two ass-kicking heels. It's kind of nice to have that style of a tag team. But boy, poor Gallows and Anderson, because they could easily be cast as those guys. It slowed down a little bit. I think, you know, the crowd was kind of excited to see Gallows and Anderson at first. And then it was just, well, it's two heel teams brawling here. And I don't know that they knew exactly which side to fall on, so they just kind of sat there. Sheamus ended up performing white noise on Gallows for a two count. They went into another break, and then at the end of this, as far as this portion of the match, Sheamus caught Gallows with a bro kick, pinned him in 22:30. So two commercials and 12 minutes those teams were in the ring together. Then finally R-Truth and Goldust come out, and I like this because the broadcast team did a really good job of explaining this. You know, Sheamus and Cesaro looked very weary, and Goldust and R-Truth were coming out fresh. So even though these are guys that rarely win, they've done a good job of setting this up, or setting it up last week by having them ask for the match. So you're looking at it going, it's probably going to be Sheamus and Cesaro, but I wonder what they're doing with Golden Truth. So this was really well done. I thought they nailed that part of it. And even though, you know, it led to the predictable finish if they're setting up a match for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. That was the other part. We didn't know. Is it for Extreme Rules? Is this for a tag title shot on Raw? I don't know. We still don't know, as far as I can tell. I didn't hear anything during the match that would indicate that the winning team would get the shot at Extreme Rules, but I think that's what's going on. But sure enough, it was Sheamus and Cesaro getting the win here. Cesaro ended up avoiding Truth, who crashed into the corner, and then Cesaro rolled him up. I think he had the handful of tights and got the win that way. And then they put the boots to the Golden Truth, and the Hardys made their entrance, and that led to Sheamus and Cesaro fleeing, which I know they're heels, but they just fought a 27-minute and 45-second match. Can you blame them? I'd leave, too. But the Hardys stand tall. Jeff Hardy hasn't been overseas for the TNA tours in several years. And it's like every time they'd go to the UK, they would do an injury angle because he had some legal issues that were held over. So he couldn't go. He couldn't leave the country, is my understanding. I don't know if it was a UK thing, if it was a probation officer thing. I believe it was the latter. I don't know the UK said, you can't come here. Because, well, he's back there now. So it looks, my guess is that it's just, well, all the legal things are behind him, and he is free to do it. And even if he was now with Impact Wrestling, I'm guessing he still could have. I don't know that WWE pulled any magic strings here or anything like this. I think it's just, well, Jeff's legal issues are finally behind him, and he's able to do this. So that's cool. Then we had the broadcast team recapping highlights of Joe and Rollins from earlier in the show. They went to a commercial. And then at the top of the third hour, it was Samoa Joe facing Seth Rollins. This was Rollins winning by DQ in 15:05. Yeah, man, this was like pay-per-view match length, but it didn't feel pay-per-view hot. There was just, it wasn't a bad match, don't get me wrong. It's just the crowd, pretty quiet down the stretch. They were kind of dueling chants for both wrestlers, so they kind of got into it. But for whatever reason, this match just kind of was missing a spark. There was something missing. It wasn't bad. It just really, it never kicked into that extra gear, whatever it would be to make it feel special. And you know, I think they may have, in retrospect, I mean, it's hard to like blame them creatively for laying it out this way, because you'd think, hey, Rollins and Joe, they can easily fill 15 minutes. This will be really good. But in retrospect, it's like, boy, playing Monday morning quarterback, maybe half that time would have been acceptable. Because I really did think they're just going to do some sort of an angle, you know, give us a taste of what this feud is like. And the reason I say half, not that they couldn't have filled more time. I mean, they filled 15 minutes, okay. It was fine. But the reason I say half is just give us that taste, let these guys run hot for 7 minutes where it feels more intense than this did, kind of stretched out over 15 minutes. Not that there wasn't intensity to it. Again, there was just a little something missing from this. And it's not that I'm down on the program going forward, but I can't say it really left me anxious for more either. It didn't, man, I got to see that rematch when these guys meet, presumably at Extreme Rules. I just didn't have that feeling coming out of it. The finish was well done. Joe went to pull Rollins off the ropes, and in the process, Rollins was trying to hold on, pulled the turnbuckle pad loose. Joe flung him into the exposed turnbuckle, and this was more accidental, was the way it was kind of portrayed. But then Joe went ahead and did it again, knowing clearly that the turnbuckle was exposed and he was DQ'd. And then afterward, he rammed him into it again, and this time he applied the Coquina clutch, and Joe was yelling, "It's over when I say it's over." So, yeah, I mean, they put heat on Joe here. There's a DQ finish. I don't know. I think they may have left him out there a little too long. One other thing I would have done here, if you're going to go with this match, I make it a main event. I really do, because not that they were in a bad slot. I mean, they're in the top of the third hour. That's a good slot. But there's just something about, you know, giving away a mid-upper-tier pay-per-view match on TV, a rematch, and it just kind of being thrown out there like this was. It should have been positioned, even if it's not in the main event, it should have been positioned as a really big deal. And so they kind of missed out on that, too. They really didn't get that pre-match build that I think they should have to get people fired up about this, to make people feel like, hey, this is special. You're seeing a match that was at Payback, and clearly wasn't resolved, and we're hoping we get the resolution tonight. These two, you saw it earlier, they were brawling. They couldn't, they just can't be contained, and we're going to let them go at it and find out who the better man is, hopefully. None of that. No, this is a big main event. None of it. It just was kind of, well, here comes Joe and Rollins, and the presentation could have been better. The sixth match was the cruiserweight match. TJP, he's no longer TJ Perkins, apparently. I picked up on it this week, and then somebody on Twitter pointed out that actually they started this last week. I mean, he's done the TJP thing before, but TJP, the artist formerly known as TJ Perkins, defeated Jack Gallagher in 3 minutes and 5 seconds. TJP continuing to be very cocky, Neville said it on commentary. Perkins ended up Gallagher avoided the detonation kick and then rolled up TJP, who rolled through and held the tights for the win. And then afterward, TJP clips the leg, like the back of the knee of Gallagher, and ended up putting him in his leg lock. And then Austin Aries showed up wearing a knee brace that is courtesy of TJP's beatdowns and attacks, as they showed at the top of the, before the match. And he ended up attacking TJP on the apron. He entered the ring, and then Perkins fled. Well, I called him Perkins. It's going to take a while too, folks. But TJP left the ring. So yeah, they put a little heat on TJP. Jack Gallagher, I mean, it's London's not his hometown. I think he's a Manchester guy, but still feels like a homecoming. So does this count? Is this another curse of the hometown wrestler? I don't know. Naomi broke it, so there is that. Coming out of the commercial break, we had a Backlash video that focused on Jinder Mahal challenging Randy Orton for the WWE Championship, and Cole told us that was a SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view, but tonight is Monday Night Raw. Great. One little thing. I think the unless I, because I do tend to just kind of inadvertently zone out the broadcast team at times. Maybe they were mentioning Extreme Rules. The only mention that I saw caught of it was the little graphic that appeared for this. That this was essentially a commercial for Backlash. I think the indication was, like, if you order the network now within your 30-day window, you'll get both Backlash and Extreme Rules. I know I saw the logo there. Seventh match was Sasha Banks beating Alicia Fox in 2:45. She performed her double knee press off the ropes and got the win. Except, the broadcast team pointed out, and they seemed to be the only people who noticed, that Fox's shoulder wasn't actually down for the three count. The live crowd, I don't think they noticed because they were distracted by something happening in the crowd. I don't know if it was a beach ball, a fight, who knows, but there was something going on in the crowd that they were consumed by. You think back to some of the reactions Sasha Banks got in NXT, and when she was first called up to the main roster, and people were so excited, and then you go to a place like London where, really good vocal fans, and it wasn't like they disliked her, but it's nowhere near that level that it once was. And I think it's another indictment of the way that WWE has handled some of these women. Yes, women's wrestling is in a better place. It doesn't mean they've treated the characters well, all of them. There's certainly, I point to Sasha Banks and Bayley on a regular basis as examples of characters that they just haven't done as good of a job with as they once did at the NXT level. Coming out of a commercial break, it was Main Event time, and it was Bray Wyatt defeating Dean Ambrose in 15:28, non-title match. Miz on commentary. He didn't stay there, said he needed to get a closer look. The idea is that Miz is challenging Ambrose on next week's Raw. So they're not sitting on that until the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Doesn't mean they won't go back to it with a rematch or something, but that match is taking place next week. So he wanted to go to ringside and get a closer look, is the way he explained it. And, of course, there was a distraction there that Wyatt tried to capitalize on. Ultimately, it was Miz hitting Ambrose with the title belt from behind. The referee didn't see it. Wyatt rolled Ambrose inside the ring, covered him for two. Ambrose kicked out, though, and then Wyatt performed Sister Abigail on Ambrose and pinned him. And then Miz announced Wyatt as the winner of the match. He entered the ring, started throwing punches at Ambrose. And I noticed that at this point, Wyatt was still in the ring. It wasn't like they were focusing on him. And I was wondering, like, all right, it's even though, I should have known better because, well, I'd seen the damn spoilers. But there was that small, before I kind of like, oh, yeah, that's right, this isn't live. That thought went through my head. For a moment there, I'm like, they're going back to Ambrose roughing up Miz? No, because this was taped earlier, stupid. He just ended up leaving the ring. But if you recall, when Miz and Wyatt teamed together, Miz made the mistake of touching Bray Wyatt, who gave him Sister Abigail. So that's why that thought popped into my head. But Miz ended up taking the mic, and he said that when he beats Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental title, he won't just be holding it in his hand, he'll be wearing it around his waist, and the world will see him as IC champion and say, awesome. And then he dropped the title belt, his music played, and the show came to an end. So in a lot of ways, this was kind of an Empire Strikes Back edition of Raw, with a lot of the heels going over, or at least kind of getting the last laugh. I mean, it wasn't that way for Roman Reigns, but, well, to this crowd, he's a heel. By and large, I'm sure he had some supporters there, but you had the heels winning the tag team turmoil match. Balor was a kind of a rare exception on this show. Sasha did go over, but it was kind of a disputed finish. Alexa goes over. And just kind of the list goes on. And then Miz helps Bray Wyatt win. Seth Rollins technically wins, but Joe kind of gets the better of him as far as one-upping him it was a DQ finish, and then he roughed him up afterward. TJP not only beat Gallagher, but he also worked him over after the match, so he got a little heat. And maybe that had something to do with the live crowd not being as hot for some things as they didn't give them a lot to cheer about as far as the match finishes are concerned. I certainly won't complain about them putting heat on the heels, though. I think it needs to happen. That part of it was welcome. But yeah, 17,323 fans in attendance at this show. If I missed it at the top, Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Booker T were all on commentary. They were there. JoJo was there. So everyone other than Kurt Angle. I don't know why Kurt Angle wasn't on this show. If it was just something where he's barely new back and they didn't get the paperwork taken care of. I guess I don't know how all of that works, but he was not there, and so you just had that awkward dynamic of, hey, we're going to make wrestlers the authority figures for the night. They could have brought in Stephanie McMahon, and I'm happy they didn't. She has been over in London because I had one of our correspondents who helped out with the report. I'll just say Chris M, so I don't butcher his last name. He pointed out, she's been all over television. He's kind of surprised she wasn't there. I just don't think they're ready to bring her back. Whether it's that they knew Kurt wasn't going to be there, something came up where he couldn't be, I mean, I have no idea. But either way, clearly, it just, in their mind, it wasn't time to bring Stephanie McMahon's character back to the television show. Because, they easily could have. They could have just reintroduced her on this show. But I'm happy they didn't. I think most of us need a break from the Stephanie McMahon character. As good of a talker as she is, it becomes overbearing, and it's time for a break. Post-WrestleMania, I'd prefer a long one. I don't think it's going to be as long as I would like, but at least they didn't rush her back onto the show this week. That is going to do it for now, though, everybody. If you enjoy hearing these late-night audio reviews and our full-length audio reviews of our major television shows, sign up for membership. I do this for the .NET members on a weekly basis for the Raw and SmackDown shows. Very rare that I end up recording on a Tuesday morning. It happens once in a while. Got to be honest with you, especially if the Vikings have a Monday Night Football game, but we're still a ways away from that happening. I don't even know if they have one this year. No, they have a Sunday. Yeah, they have one to start the season. That's right. But other than that, I'm pretty consistent about doing these late-night audio reviews for both Raw and SmackDown. So if you like them late night, they're there for you in the first thing in the morning for your commute, whatever the case may be, just like the full-on audio review, know that .NET members have access to them weekly, along with the NXT television show reviews, 205 Live, Lucha Underground when it's in season, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, and then all the major pay-per-view events covered in audio form as well. For instance, on Friday night, I will be covering the Ring of Honor pay-per-view live, and .NET members will get an exclusive audio review of the show afterward as well. If you are interested in a membership, all you have to do is visit the main page at ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area. Three different pricing options are waiting for you. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. If you want to save some money, we have the six-month option and the annual option. As I always point out, that annual option, that'll knock $2 off of your monthly price. That'll bring it down to an average of $5.50 per month. And one final reminder, hey, you want to save yourself a little bit of money? Listen to the latest Ross Report podcast. If you're listening to this before Tuesday evening, you should listen to that one too. But listen to the one that I'm on, and you will actually be able to find a coupon code in there that you can enter on the sign-up page that will bring that $7.50 price tag. Yeah, it'll bring it down to $1 for 1 month. So check out the Ross Report podcast with host Jim Ross and guest Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, and myself, and you will find that coupon code toward the end of my appearance. We would love to have you sample what we do on the membership side. But that is going to do it for now, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be talking to you again very soon. Until next time, take care.